Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we share all kinds of tips, advice, and interview guests on all things innovation and leadership in modern marketing. Each episode is a conversation with inspiring people who make wonderful contributions to our knowledge in these areas and spark curiosity and ideas to pursue. Join me, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and let's get into today's masterclass on this InnovaBuzz podcast.
If you're going to have a great culture, you have to genuinely believe that your people are the most important resource that you have. And if you actually believe that, because not everyone believes that, if you actually believe that, then it will dictate your thinking and your actions thereafter. And they'll be congruent with your beliefs. And if you do put your people ahead of everything, and you do invest in them and their happiness is truly important to you, then you give yourself the opportunity to build a great culture.
Hi there, innovator. It's great to be back with another episode. I hope you've had an awesome week so far. I trust too that you enjoyed my recent conversations with Jason Resnick, who is a referral and recurring revenue specialist and a freelance coach, and George Bryant of GB Masterminds, which was another exciting episode. Today, I'm really excited to have on the InnovaBuzz podcast as my guest, Corey Wassell of Verse Wealth. Verse is a really fast-growing financial planning and financial coaching firm that delivers purposeful and personalized advice based on outcomes that really matter to their clients. This is a fascinating interview, and the lessons that Corey shares are applicable to any service industry. A quick promotional message from our sponsor, that's InnovaBiz. We help coaches and consultants build professional credibility, engage their target audience, and connect with their ideal clients. Now, if you want to get more clarity about who your ideal client is, then go and take a look at our Marketing Master Mini Class. It's just two modules, and in less than 30 minutes, you'll get absolute clarity on who your ideal client is, what they believe and value, and how you can communicate with them to build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship. Access the Marketing Master Mini Class at innovabiz.co/marketingmaster. It's completely free and accessible without even giving us your email. In our discussion today, Corey talked to me about building his organization with a culture-first approach, also taking care of their people first, and they then take care of the customers. And he explained how Verse gain alignment across their organization with the OKR framework. Without further ado then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Corey Wassell. Hi, I'm your host, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast today from Melbourne, Australia, Corey Wassell, who is the financial coach and founder of Verse Wealth. Welcome to the podcast, Corey. It's a privilege to have you as my guest.
Thank you for having me, Jürgen. Looking forward to it.
Adam Murray, who was our guest on episode 219 of the InnovaBuzz podcast, suggested that we have a conversation with you, Corey. So, big hello to Adam.
G'day, Adam, and thank you for the intro.
Now, at Verse, you help people achieve their individual ambitions through transparent and personalized financial advice. Now, one of the things you point out in your website is that traditional financial advice has historically focused on things like selling and products and commissions, and that there's so much more that is involved really to serve the customer well. So you're obsessed with people, value, and progress. So I'm really looking forward to exploring that in more detail. But before we dig into finance and financial advice, and I guess you've got to do the disclaimer if you give us any advice here. So tell us why you do what you do.
Yeah, sure. Great question. So I guess just a bit of context, you know, growing up, I was always a saver, not a spender. I was always a hard worker. I was investing in the share market in my teenage years and borrowing money to invest, and was really, really intent on setting myself up as early as I could in my life financially. And the only motivation I had in doing that was never to be rich, but just because I recognized that money is most commonly the thing that gets in the way of people living, you know, what we coin as their best life. You know, I want to have a great life, you know, now as a family man as well, full of experiences and the things I want to do. And I want to, you know, avoid stresses and compromise and recognize that money is more than anything, it's just a tool, right? It's a tool to help you do the things you want to do in life. And I didn't want a lack of resources to stop me living my own best life. And that was my motivation for really kind of getting ahead financially early on. And I guess I started investing and found it interesting and built up some knowledge and decided that I actually want to help other people do the same thing with their finances and make sure money wasn't a roadblock to them, you know, living their best life. And that was my reason for getting into financial advice. And I guess we'll probably talk more so about the business soon enough. But when I actually got into financial advice, I realized it was probably doing different things than I thought it was doing, hence the motivation to go and found my own firm and try and do advice differently for people.
Mm, okay. Yeah, I guess the money thing is a big one, isn't it? Because people place so much importance on it and forget that it's an enabler for life. But then when you turn it around the other way and look at, let's say, the marriage breakdowns, I mean, one of the biggest triggers of breakdowns of relationships is you know, people not agreeing over money and what to do with money. So it is a really big thing, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, we're not telling people things that aren't inherently know here. Like, money is just interwoven through so many aspects of our life, our relationships, and our well-being. And I think managing money well and being good with money is just key to navigating life well. And if you are poor with money, or you're ill-disciplined, or you make significant financial mistakes, it is going to affect the quality of your life, you know, and in turn potentially your relationships and your well-being. That's undisputable too often, unfortunately.
Yeah. So what's different about Verse to kind of the traditional financial advising firms?
Yeah, good question. So again, I guess to pick up where I left off there. So when I started in financial advice back in 2011 and started at one of the big four banks in Australia, and I kind of got there in that business at the tail end of a really bad period, which has been publicly documented as part of the Royal Commission and those types of things. And, you know, I kind of mentioned before, Jürgen, that, you know, financial advice, like money is, financial advice is about people. It's not about the money. And it's about helping people make decisions in the day-to-day, but also strategically to make sure they can get what they want out of their life with money as a facilitator to that. And when I got into advice, I quickly recognized that, you know, there was a really poor infrastructure set up within the industry. The infrastructure was built around product distribution, meaning getting people into like one super fund over another, or selling people, you know, personal insurance and life insurance and income protection, and really building their businesses and living off, you know, commissions. And there just seemed to me to be this real misunderstanding of where the value of financial advice actually lies for people. And, you know, I began seeing clients and recognizing really quickly that a lot of people have this skepticism about getting financial advice, like the apprehension about going and seeing an advisor and what conflicts might exist and what the value of the experience is actually going to be for them. And from my perspective, you know, in the 3-4 years I was at this bank, you know, I worked with lots of different advisors and saw people doing different things. And at no point ever did I see anything that I thought really resembled what financial advice could be. And never saw any clients kind of getting the full impact and the full value out of seeing a financial advisor. And, you know, in terms of founding our firm, Verse, which we did in early 2015, I co-founded it at the time, and we really wanted to make financial advice something that was deeply personal. and it was impactful for people. And, you know, for the right person at the right time, it can actually, personal advice can actually be transformative. There's transformative components to it. But the industry typically has been so fixated on kind of where is your super and selling your insurance and maybe managing an investment portfolio. But there's so many elements to your financial life that are just so interwoven with your actual life that, you know, financial advice is, you know, I mentioned you before we jumped on, you know, it's been done, it's been a 2D experience for people in the past, but really when it's done well, it's a 4D experience. You know, it's about helping people get clarity on what they really want out of their life, like what's most important to them, that's their values, and using that as a reference point for decision-making. It's about helping them make big decisions in life, like big trade-off decisions. You know, I'm stressed at work, I'm feeling under pressure, I'm traveling too much, I'm not seeing my kids. Can I take a job closer to home that's going to improve my well-being and give me more time with my family, which inherently I value most in life, but maybe it means we slow down our financial progress. Is that the right thing for me to do? Do I have blind spots? You know, giving people guidance and leadership and accountability, making sure they don't make big mistakes, making sure they're disciplined day-to-day, making sure they're educated. You know, there's just so many elements to helping someone optimize their financial life and in turn achieve goals and solve problems, and a big part of that's coaching. You know, and these are the things that we have. We've really kind of looked at financial advice and gone, you know, where does the value really exist? And it doesn't exist in the traditional kind of pillars that it's operated around. So we've tried to take those pillars. We haven't, you know, we still need to give people advice on superannuation. They might need insurance and so on. We're really trying to build in and add in the valuable transformative components of advice, which I think is by far and away we've come to learn the most impactful elements.
Yeah, yeah. You mentioned coaching there. It occurred to me even before you got to that, that there's a fair bit of life coaching stuff in that to, you know, help people clarify their values, I guess. I mean, most people have values, but they're not necessarily good at articulating what they are or figuring out how their beliefs and behavior actually align with their values and you know, when they're stressed, why that might be out of alignment. Because the example you mentioned of, you know, I'm going to this job that, and I've had this experience, you know, going to a job that took me 30% of my time on international travel, and it was a great job that I enjoyed and paid well, but then I, you know, missed time with family, and trying to balance that certainly created some stress. So, you know, how do you see that life coaching aspect part of it?
Yeah, I mean, I've had people in the past, you know, when we kind of explain how we help people, they say, oh, so you're, you know, you're kind of like a life coach as well. Mm. And I thought, we're not a life coach, but the reality is that your life and your money are just so intertwined in this complex web that, you know, a real financial advisor doesn't, you know, pretend like they're working in isolation. You know, we kind of embrace the fact that life is complicated, life is messy. And we're trying to work at that intersection between your money and your life, something you say internally. So, you know, we need to have these values-based conversations with clients, but the way that we've done it is we've created a process that all the advisors and coaches at Verse take clients through, and it's technology-enabled, so the client will come in, they'll sit down with an iPad, and we'll guide them through the process, which basically has three components to it. We start with your values, so what you value most in life. And that's really what's driving your decision-making. And like you said, you know, if you're living in line with your values, whether you realize it or not, you're more inclined to be happy and satisfied and content and fulfilled in life. And if you're not living in line with your values, your highest values, you're more likely to be dissatisfied and discontent and unhappy. And we take people through this process of identifying their three highest values. It's a couple, we'll do it individually because they're two separate people. So then we know what's really driving, what's motivating, what do they ultimately need to get out of their money? Is that, you know, is that freedom? Is that family? Is that better well-being? Is that security? Is it stability? Is it achievement? And then once we've clarified their values, then we'll get them to identify and define their goals, so what they're actually working towards. And that's things like, you know, buying a bigger home, putting the kids through private school, you know, reaching financial freedom, starting a business, you know, winding up a business. You know, there'll be a whole range of things that people are working towards and the priorities that they have. And that's where strategy comes in. We work towards those with strategy. And then we define what we call their financial challenges. So these are basically, what are the things getting in the way of them, you know, building real wealth, achieving their goals, or just feeling in control and confident with their money generally. And, you know, that could be that they lack accountability, or they spend too much money, or they misalign with their partner, or they don't have great structure, or they're lacking education. We'll identify what those things are as well. And then essentially, over the journey, we'll systematically resolve their challenges, typically quite quickly, work towards strategically their goals, but make sure that when we're working towards their goals, we're working towards the right goals. Because quite often they'll come in and they might have eight goals as a couple, but they can't achieve eight things. You know, like your resources are limited, time, energy, and money, and we consider all of those three components. And we have trade-off conversations with clients. So, well, there's eight goals here. Like, what is most important? And that's where the values are important. They're a reference point. Like, what's going to give you more value? And then let's direct your energy and your resources towards achieving those goals, because we know they're of high value. So that's an annual process we go through with clients, because life's constantly evolving. Challenges are being solved. New challenges can come to light. Goals get achieved. Some goals become less important. Goals change really readily in people's lives, more than they anticipate. Their values are more so fixed. They do evolve gradually over time, but you know, we go through that process annually with clients, and you know, it really is a reference point for the advice and guidance and strategy that they get from us.
Mm. Yeah, sounds like a very comprehensive process. I'm intrigued how you go about when some of the challenges come up. Particularly, you mentioned one there. If a couple is not in alignment, I mean, how do you deal with that one as a financial advisor?
Yeah, look, there have been many occasions over the years where you almost feel like you're a marriage counsellor. We've seen, you know, many examples where people are to a degree misaligned around an issue. That could be, are we putting the kids through private school or are we not? Should we prioritise the bigger house or private school as an example? But then all the way to, you know, couples have been married for 25, 30 years and you can tell that how their money has been managed has caused a great deal of resentment between them and potentially really, you know, caused a deterioration in their relationship, a significant one. And, you know, I mean, it's subjective, but, you know, there's a few clients in particular that come to mind. If you said to them, you said, what's the best thing that's happened to your marriage in the last 20 years? They'd probably say going and getting financial advice. Getting rid of those challenges, becoming aligned, getting rid of that resentment, you know, and part of that process is getting them in and having this really honest conversation about what do we actually really value in life and what do we actually really want to achieve and what's really holding us back or worrying us. And it's not uncommon for people to get emotional, you know, in that conversation or learn things about their spouse. You know, sometimes the husband's sitting there and the wife's talking about something and she's getting quite emotional about it. And the husband's like, I didn't know this was, you know, this important to you. Mm. You know, you'd never explained it like this before. You know, and, you know, that even before you get financial advice, just having that conversation in and of itself is truly valuable for people.
Yeah. 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 Well, I imagine that, you know, seeing some of those things happen and seeing the changes that come about that are well beyond just growing your client's wealth would give you a big buzz.
Yeah, absolutely. Not just me, but like, you know, the whole team. Mm. You know, and it's part of what's missed in financial advice historically is that financial advice and advisors have been more fixated on the tangibles of advice, like how much tax are we saving you? What's this portfolio return? How much are we reducing the fees on your super fund? We do all these things, right? And they're of value. But there's intangible elements to the experience that are at play that's being done well that are infinitely more valuable, you know? And, you know, seeing a client achieve a goal, like buy that new home, like, that's great. Like we love that, right? We get a kick out of that. But what we get a kick out of more is just seeing the stress be removed from people's lives, just seeing them be more energized, seeing them have more confidence, seeing them feel more in control of their own destiny. You know, those things are like, and you can't price those, right? That's why they're the
That's right.
that's the, like, you know, at the end of the day, like, everyone's just chasing feelings. The goals people give us, they actually really don't matter that much. It's the feeling behind the goal. Like, what's the goal actually going to give me? Mm. Why is it important for me? And when you see those things kind of, you know, come to life for people and materialize, then that's when you really kind of, that's when you know that you're making a difference to people, which is, yeah, which is really cool. It's a privilege to kind of have that role in people's lives.
Mm. Yeah, well, I think what you said there is really important, and it brings back the idea. And I don't know whether it was Seth Godin who first said this, but he certainly points it out in his latest marketing book around, you know, you're not selling your product or service to the client. What you're actually selling to them is the experience you create for them.
Yeah.
And how you make them feel.
Hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we've got a library in our office. There's about 8 Seth books in there. So yeah. A big fan of Seth, and I've got that latest book as well. But it's absolutely true. And I think in any service business or any product business, if you recognize that, then you can build and improve your goods or services to really deliver on those things that ultimately people are actually buying, whether they realize it or not.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, you mentioned that you founded Verse in 2015, so you've been going for just 4 years, and yet I know you've grown quite substantially and been quite successful. So, first of all, what's been your major way to grow your client base?
Sure. So we've had 3 sources of inquiries or leads, if you want to define it. We have our current clients refer new clients to us. We have referral partners refer clients to us. That's, you know, the accountants that we work with and collaborate with, or mortgage brokers or property specialists or even lawyers. And then our primary source of leads into the business is online, via Google, via our website. We've developed a not significant but a reasonable presence online over time by producing content, by participating in, you know, things like podcasts and industry events and so on. You know, that's become a very good mechanism for us to be able to grow the business. But, you know, when we started with nothing. You know, we didn't, most advisors, when they go out on their own, they'll buy what's called a client book. Basically, you buy the clients from another financial advisor, and you buy the revenues, i.e. what the client's paying for advice or paying insurance commissions and so on. We didn't do that because we didn't want to inherit any of the traditions of financial advice. We wanted to really start with a blank canvas, so which has meant, like, in terms of growth, it's been a much slower burn than it could have been. Like, we could have built something 5-10 times the size of what we have at this point in time if we were just fixated on growth. You know, we've been fixated on trying to build something great that is impactful and valuable. And once we figure that out to a large degree, then our intent is to scale that. And we kind of feel like, to a degree, phase one is kind of complete is completely the wrong word. We feel like we've done phase one quite well. It's personal, it's impactful. We've learned a lot about advice. We know the experience is great. We can get a whole lot better, but it's great as a starting point. Now, how do we grow and how do we scale it, which is going to be one of the challenges for me personally and the company into the future.
Mm. So we mentioned earlier that you were focused very much on people and the experience. And I know, you know, in the pre-discussion we had, you highlighted how important culture was. So was that something that you built right off the bat? And I guess that's a closed question, so I'll ask it in a more open way. How did you build the culture off the bat when you first started?
Yeah, so Before myself and James O'Reilly, who was the co-founder of the firm, started, about 6 months before we launched, the first really significant thing we did was define what kind of culture we wanted to create, and define that culture by a set of values. And, you know, I think most businesses have values, but for most businesses, they're just kind of words that hang on a wall, and they're largely irrelevant to the day-to-day environment and how people think and behave and act. And what a set of values should be is there should be a framework, like the house rules. They're basically guiding principles for how someone is to behave and interact with their teammates, with clients, how they make decisions, how they conduct themselves day to day, and comes a real kind of framework of accountability internally within an organization. We started with seven values, and we basically have tried to interweave them into as many elements of the company as we possibly can, from how we hire to how we recognize people to how we set goals to how we interact with each other, how I conduct a teammate review, like a performance review. And we have tried to really not have the values and the culture as something that's kind of owned by leadership, but have our culture as one that's owned by everyone. So our culture is not my culture, it's our team's culture. And they partake in improving it, in holding others accountable to it, in reflecting on it, on changing it. Every year we have an annual retreat where we start our year, we go away as a team for, you know, 3 to 4 days. And part of what we do is we reflect on our culture and our values. You go, look, are they the best representation of who we are and who we want to be and how we want to behave? And as we evolve, because we're evolving just like a human being does, we're constantly evolving our culture and how we define our culture. And it's kind of an ethos that we had before we started, an ethos that we've maintained all the way along. And we've done it because my inherent belief has always been that, you know, if you get culture, like if you get great people and you can build a great culture for them, helps them, you know, realize their potential and have fun and enjoy work, everything else from there starts to fall into place. Like everything gets a lot easier. Everything. And you know, that's why we're really obsessive about trying to have a great environment for people. And there's many facets to, like, what do we actually do day to day to kind of bring that to life. But that's the thinking behind starting, you know, our culture and investing in it and defining it.
Yeah. That's there's so much to love about that. You know, starting off with, I guess you said that it's not your culture, it's the team's culture, but it does start at the top. And so, you know, even before you started the company, you and your co-founder worked on defining that culture. And then, of course, it evolved from there and letting the team buy in and have ownership, and then revising it every year at that retreat is a great way to do that, I think. But there's, you know, there's so much great value in what you've outlined there for any business. It doesn't matter whether it's financial planning or anything, really. And I see it so many times where, you know, the culture is, as you say, it's writing on the wall somewhere. Some companies do that well because they have a nice graphic artist design something and there it is up on the wall. But when you watch what goes on in the day-to-day interactions and how they treat one another, how they treat their customers, you say, well, hang on, that's not consistent with the culture.
Yeah. And you're right. Like everything starts with leadership. Like the bottleneck is always at the top of the bottle, is something I heard from this. the leader sets the tone, always. So if you're going to have a great culture, you need to embody better than anyone all the values and principles that you want the team to live by. And you also need to, you need to have enough vulnerability to recognize, hey, I'm not in control of it all, and I need to kind of decentralize our culture and our decision making, and trust people and allow them to kind of take ownership and improve things. And I think when you look at, like, I've always been a big sports fan. Both my parents, like my dad was a pro golfer, my mum's an elite golfer, and just grew up around sport all the time. I was one of five boys, and my childhood, if I could define it in three words, was sport, sport, sport. and I don't know why. I don't know why, but I've always had this fascination. I've always been really interested in leadership and leaders. And one thing that has always kind of seemed obvious to me is that when I look at sporting teams, those that have sustainable success over the long run. It's not just like 1 year or a few weeks that they win one medal or whatever. Like, they do it week in, week out, year in, year out, over a long period of time at a high level. It always comes back to people, culture, and leadership. Mm. And, you know, whether it's, you know, the AFL, which is the sport that I probably love most, and I look at the organisations that have the most amount of success, they have the best leaders and the strongest cultures. They just do. And when you take, when you have a great culture, what happens is you take maybe an average person and put them into a great culture, and they give great outcomes and great commitment. And when you take a great person and put them in an average culture, it brings them down, right? Environment has such a big influence on how we think and how we behave. And, you know, if you can create a culture that gets the best out of people, you're in the natural consequences, you get the best out of your business. Because you've got people that are focused and they're committed and they care and they challenge things and, you know, they work as a team. And even just the concept that we don't have any politics in our organization. Like none, like literally none at all, you know. Like every other place I've ever worked has, you know, like there's always politics and people talking about things behind closed doors and there's little pockets of friction that exist. And you know, we're a small team at the moment. We're five, shortly six. I'm not going to say small forever. And it will be one of our great challenges that as we grow and scale to maintain that quality of culture. But, you know, it's a challenge I'm looking forward to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I had to laugh with the politics because certainly in bigger organisations it seems inevitable that you get that politics, and I don't know what it is around whether they're not capable of building that sort of culture, or whether it's just once they get to a certain age or size, it's just inevitable. But I know you're a big fan of the outcome key results system that I think was first popularized through Google or one of the Google senior executives. How do you use that to kind of measure some of the softer things like culture and, you know, beliefs, and are people kind of behaving in alignment with the value? Because I guess it's pretty clear to say, well, here's a goal, we need to achieve so many sales, and here's some of the key results to get to that goal, which are numerical, and then you can kind of put a clear measure on that. But how do you use it for some of those softer things?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So I guess for those listening that aren't familiar with OKRs, that acronym stands for Objective and Key Results. And as you said, Jürgen, it's a goal-setting framework made famous by Google. They adopted it in their early years, about 20 years ago. And it's now, OKRs are now used by a lot of Silicon Valley companies, you know, Airbnb, LinkedIn, you know, like I could probably reel off about 8 to 10 of them that use OKRs. And essentially what it is it is a framework for a company across all levels of an organization to like set goals, set the right goals, so you're heading in the right direction. And that's your O, your objective. Which, you know, is basically a one-line statement that gets the company excited about a future goal you're trying to achieve. And then your KRs, your key results, are basically how are we going to measure our success or measure our progress towards that objective. So, example, using Verse, one of our objectives is to provide a world-class client experience. So, that, you know, that just provide the concept of providing world-class client experience gets everyone internally excited. Like that's really a goal worth shooting for. And then from there, the question is, okay, well, how are we going to measure that success? How are we going to know that we are providing a world-class client experience or we're on our way? So one of our KRs, one of the measurable outcomes, is our NPS, which is a Net Promoter Score. So globally, it's a survey tool we use to basically identify how referable you are. And it's the most common indicator of the quality of your client or customer experience. So we know that to be defined as world-class, you need to have an NPS above 90, which is stunningly hard to obtain, above 80, I should say, sorry. And our NPS currently, our rolling six-month NPS is 68. So we know that we're not delivering a world-class client experience. We're on our way, but there's a long way to go from 68 to 80. It doesn't sound like a long way, but it is. Mm-hmm. So then what you do is you say, okay, so what are the actions as a company over the next 90 days that we need to take to move the needle on this KR? What do we think we can best deploy our time and energy into that is going to push our NPS up, and we know that in turn work towards our objective of providing world-class client experience? So that's how the framework works. And it works on a 90-day recurring loop. Every 90 days, the whole team, organization is sitting down and going, all right, what is our progress? Let's look at the numbers. Let's look at our KRs. And if we're on track, great. If we're not, then we need to ask the question, are we taking the right actions? You know, never be wedded to the actions that you're taking, be wedded to the outcomes. And it's enabled us to go from thinking about what we're doing to why we're actually doing it. To the trap I think virtually all business owners are in, you don't even know you're in it until someone makes you aware that that's kind of how you're thinking and operating. And in terms of like kind of getting to your question around how do you use that for the softer thing? So as part of our OKRs, we don't measure the quality of our culture. You absolutely could, right? You could have an objective that could be, we want to have a world-class culture. And then your KR, key result, could be, we want a happiness score, because you're going to track happiness with your staff or your team. We want a happiness score of 9.5 plus. And maybe every 6 months before you do performance reviews, you get them to complete a survey. And on that survey, one of the questions is, out of 10, how happy are you working at company X? And you might find that at the moment, your happiness score is 7.8. And then you ask the question of, okay, well, as an organization, to go from 7.8 to 9.5, what actions are we going to take to make this a better culture for people? So you set goals worth shooting for, you make it measurable, so then you know whether you're on track or you're not, and then you reverse engineer your actions. So, you know, at our end, we have 6 monthly reviews with all of our teammates, but to a large degree, they're almost not needed in the sense that, you know, we talk internally all the time, every 2 weeks. So I spend some time individually with every teammate as a check-in. And that's, you know, it's half business, it's half personal. And I'm basically just trying to understand, how happy are you? What could we change for you? What can we improve for you? What do you want next? You know, what's going on in your world? So they always feel understood and always feel like we're doing what we can to, you know, to make them as happy as possible.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I like that you said, you know, you don't wait for the 6 monthly review to kind of check your progress, because if you're not making progress over 6 months, it might be a big issue. So you want to be kind of alert to it, whether you're on the right railway track, so to speak, or whether you've missed a point along the way.
You're absolutely true. And the thing is too, right, like you can't assume that your employees are going to tell you everything that you want to know. You know, like, people get surprises. If you're building a culture of our values, the value that is of the most value internally is what we call total transparency. We could also coin this to be called radical honesty. Where basically everyone within the team, top to bottom, left to right, commits to radical honesty. And it means that I'm always going to be honest with them, good, bad, or otherwise, and they're always going to be honest with me, good, bad, or otherwise. And I think, like, in terms of, like, having a great culture, you have to have brutal honesty amongst everyone. And it means that, like, things don't fester, things don't build. When there's a high level of honesty, there's also a high level of trust. In organizations where there's a low level of trust, you'll find that there's a very low level of honesty as well. They're incredibly correlated. And, you know, when you're having these monthly reviews or whatever you're doing with your team, you really want to have this culture. And you also need the relationships, but you need the culture first, where honesty, radical honesty, is valued, but it's also expected. And to give you an example is, like, when we say we call them teammate reviews. We don't have staff, we don't have employees, we have teammates. We're all teammates, because that's what teams have, they have teammates. And one of the questions that they will complete before I sit down with them is, if you were to leave versus tomorrow, why would you leave? And literally every 6 months, there is a response from every teammate telling me why they would leave. And it could be that they're traveling too far for work and they're not getting enough time with their, you know, their 4-year-old daughter. It could be that, you know, they, you know, looking at starting a family soon and they need to earn more money and the salary they're on is not going to do that for them. It could be that they feel like, you know, they're kind of stagnating in their role and they need that next growth opportunity, but maybe it's not present in the company for them right now. It could be anything. But what happens is with that environment of radical honesty is they're actually telling you those things. So then you're getting the opportunity to actually work through them and help them with them. And, you know, it's such a simple thing, like this environment of radical honesty, but I tell you, it is by far and away the most important component, I believe, to having a great team.
I really love that, particularly your example, because what usually happens in companies is people come to you, or you know, a team member might come to you and say, well, I've decided to leave and go and take another job. And then the person in charge says, oh, that's a real surprise to me because I thought you were happy. We were really happy with you. You're doing really well. And then they'll say, yeah, but, you know, I have to travel too far so I don't get time with my kids or whatever it might be. And you say, well, gee, I didn't know about that. Why didn't you come and talk to me? So to build that culture where they do that is really great.
Yeah, and how costly is that for an organization to lose good people for reasons that you only become aware of when they've already made their decision to leave?
Yeah, and often for reasons that, you know, you might be able to do something about in terms of changing something that at least mitigates the circumstance. I mean, in that example, it might be, hey, what if you work from home a couple of days a week? You know, would that help? Would that make it better? So, you know, there's options these days to most of those examples that you provided where, you know, the employer can say, well, maybe we can find a different way to do this and still get the results, still get you performing as a really high valued team member and bringing the outcomes to the business that are required and you know, be happier.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, just to kind of close on this one, Jürgen, like if you're going to have a great culture, you have to genuinely believe that your people are the most important resource that you have, like by a mile. And if you actually believe that, because not everyone believes that, if you actually believe that, then it will dictate your thinking and your actions thereafter. And they'll be congruent with your beliefs. And if you do put your people ahead of everything and you do invest in them and their happiness is truly important to you, you know, then you give yourself the opportunity to build a great culture. But you can't build a great culture if you don't believe that people are the most important thing you're ever going to have in your business.
Hmm. Yeah, that's great advice. And I think it was Richard Branson that said, take care of your people and they'll take care of your customers or something like that.
It's counterintuitive to that old, you know, that old concept of, you know, like the customer's always right.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the customer always comes first. No, they don't. They come second. They're truly important, but your people are most important.
Yeah, that's right, because they'll take care of the customers.
Yeah, awesome.
All right, well, we've covered a lot there in terms of how you've built a culture at Verse and lots of great ideas there. We've managed to steer clear of tempting you to give us financial advice. So I'm looking at the time, so we might move on to the buzz, which is our innovation round, and we'll spare you giving us financial advice today. So the innovation round is designed to help our audience who are primarily innovators and leaders in their field with some tips from your experience. So I've got 5 questions and hopefully you'll give us some really insightful answers that will inspire the listener to go and do something awesome today.
Well, let's see. Let's not speak too soon.
All right. So the number one thing, what do you think the number one thing is that anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
Be obsessive about improvement and getting better.
That's great advice. And you know, obviously you're practicing that through building that culture and the reviews and the OKR implementation. So great advice. Now, what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
I will say the OKR framework that we adopted, because it's decentralized innovation and decision-making, and it's really brought everyone within the team into the process of innovating, you know, all the elements of the company and the experience.
All right. That's great. Now, we will post a link to some information on OKR in the show notes for those that want to explore that some more. So I think that's well worth taking a look at. Now, what's a resource that you use most often? And you might come back with OKR.
In what sense? Like a bit of tech within the company? Or?
Well, it could be tech, or, you know, some people have said that they like journaling, or that, what was my last guest said, my brain.
Well, most often probably not, but meditation I've found to be the most valuable resource. It's a force multiplier, and the periods of time where I've done that consistently, twice a day, 20 minutes a day, it's transformative for my level of thinking and judgment and clarity and well-being and execution.
Okay. All right. That's great. We talked a little bit about this earlier, but what's the best way to keep a client on track? Let's say you've worked with a client, you've clarified goals and values, and you've got some financial plans or financial strategies in place. What's the best way to keep them on track?
Talk with them regularly. So, with the clients we're on the journey together with, we sit down with them in person or over video conference every 90 days. So, just make sure there's not too long between drinks, too long between conversations, because time is when people get off track.
Yeah.
If you spoke with your advisor every single day, this is an extreme example, not many people would get off track. So talk with your advisor regularly. If you're the advisor, talk with your client regularly.
All right. That's great advice. Yeah. I think simple things like regular communication is often overlooked in the value it brings to any sort of relationship between a supplier and a client, and particularly if you're doing any sort of coaching as you are. So what's the number one thing you think anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
Geez, that's a big question. Number one thing they can do, be themselves. I mean, it's a very simple answer, but I mean, everyone's different. Live your own life, speak your own truth, and put yourself out in the world, because out there in the world, there is no one else like you. You are inherently unique and different. Everyone is in a great way.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people have said that. So you haven't differentiated yourself by the answer, but I think, I think the idea of total transparency comes in to that there, let people see who you really are. And I think it is really good advice.
In a business sense, a culture is a great way to make yourself and different and create a place that people want to be and create something that people want to be part of. That's unique and different.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you there, because I think, you talked earlier about why people might want to leave, and the old way back in when I was starting my corporate career, people thought, well, if we give you more money, you'll be happy and you'll stay. But the money part of it is only a part of the total package. And, when employers realize that it's about how happy and fulfilled that the team members feel in the environment they're in, that's really what it boils down to.
Totally agree.
All right. Well, thanks, Corey. This has been absolutely great. Now, where can people reach out and find out more about Verse Wealth and find out more about you and maybe even get in touch to say thank you for what you've shared with us today?
Sure. Well, they can find out more about Verse on our website, www.versewealth.com.au, and they can find out more about me and the team on there. And if they want to connect with me personally on LinkedIn, I'd be more than happy to do that.
Great. And we'll have links to all of those places in the show notes as well. Now, what's the number one piece of advice you'd leave with our audience for any business owner that wants to be a leader in their field and a leader in innovation?
Be willing to do the hard things and be probably over and above that, be an independent thinker. I think all leaders in all fields are independent thinkers. They don't follow the status quo. They don't follow the traditions. They think independently themselves. And, you know, they follow their own truths.
Mm, yeah, great advice. And which then is a big differentiator, right?
Yeah, if you do that, if you're an independent thinker, you're probably going to differentiate yourself. You're right. We're getting right, there. Well,
yeah. Finally, the last question, who would you like me to interview on a future Innova Buzz podcast and why?
Who would I like you to interview? Geez, question without notice. Not sure. I might have to come back to you on that one. No, I'm not sure, mate.
All right. Well, we'll get a recommendation from you once you've had a chance to think about it.
Sounds good.
Well, thanks so much for sharing your time and your insights today on the Innova Buzz podcast, Corey. I've really enjoyed this. It's been a great conversation about, I think we've skirted financial advice successfully. We haven't talked much about finance at all, but about building and growing a successful company with a great culture very quickly and, you know, positioning it in a way that hopefully that culture and that service for the client will be maintained as you grow much further. And I know you've got big plans. So all the best for the future and let's keep in touch.
Yeah, thanks, Jürgen. I really appreciate you having me on the podcast. And I think you mentioned number 219, was that right?
That's correct. Oh, yeah, actually, 227 we're at for this
27.
One. Yeah.
That is a phenomenal achievement to put so much great content out there into the world. Well done. Thanks for letting me be part of it.
Thanks, Corey. I hope you enjoyed that informative and enlightening conversation with Corey and took something away from this episode. He shared some wonderful tips about the company culture and ensuring outstanding service by enabling their staff to be their best and aligned to the company vision. I'd love to know what you took away from Corey's episode. Leave a comment below the blog post, which you can find at innovabiz.co/CoreyWassell. That is CoreyWassTle. All lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.co/CoreyWassell. You'll also find contact information for getting in touch with Corey there, as well as links to the Verse website, to his social media pages, and to the other resources that we spoke about in today's conversation. Corey suggested we get Andrew van der Beek from Illuminate on a future Innova Buzz podcast for a conversation. So, Andrew, keep an eye on your inbox for an invitation from us to the Innova Buzz podcast, courtesy of Corey Wassell. Remember to check out our Marketing Master mini class at innovabiz.co/marketingmaster. It is completely free and you can get access without even giving us your email. In less than 30 minutes, you'll gain absolute clarity about your ideal client and how you can communicate with them to gain, build, and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship. And if you'd like our help to go even deeper into marketing mastery or our help with podcast production, then send me an email to jürgen@innovabiz.co and we'll set up a quick call just to get to know one another. Tune in again next week to the Innova Buzz podcast. We've got some more fantastic guests lined up, including Brad Smith from Simplecast and Scott Perry from Creative on Purpose. Stay connected with us by subscribing to the Innova Buzz podcast at innovabuzz.com/subscribe, innovabuzz.com innovator.com/subscribe. Make sure you never miss another episode. It would also mean a lot to me if you leave us a review, because what you think matters. I'd love to hear your thoughts, your ideas, your suggestions, or questions you have, so go ahead and share them in the comments below the blog post for this episode. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember, be awesome and keep innovating.